Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined, and I'm very excited to be joined by Chaz Woodson, the newly named head coach of the Hampton Pirates, the third coach in program history, taking over for Rashad DeVoe, who spent one season in Hampton, a shortened season albeit, before becoming the head coach to Amherst, taking over for Lloyd Carter, the founding coach of the program, who led them in their first varsity season in 2016 and helped form the club in 2013. Chaz, thank you so much for joining us. How does it feel to be a college coach?
That feels pretty good. I mean, I think, first of all, thanks for having me on. But yeah, to answer the question, it's, you know, it's sort of just to me the next step in a coaching evolution. You know, I've been coaching for a while, and so I think I was ready personally and professionally for a new challenge. And so here we are. You know, I'm trying not to think of it too much as you know, this big leap to Division I lacrosse. I've been around high-level lacrosse plenty, and certainly, you know, though I haven't coached, I understand what it's all about. So the big thing is just, like I said, taking on a new challenge and continuing the journey.
So that's at least half of why you seized this opportunity. But there's also the specifics about this opportunity to coach Hampton's men's lacrosse team. Why this and why now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, you know, divine order and timing to everything. And, you know, I think for me, I've personally entertained the idea of coaching collegiately before, but there's a lot about it that I wasn't really all that interested in, to be honest with you. But what I have been interested in, probably since I was in college, is the development of lacrosse at an HBCU. And so as this thing starts to develop from the very beginning, it's always been on my radar. You know, for it to be home back in Hampton Roads, where I grew up, you know, that is also meaningful to me. And I think, you know, at this particular moment, I think it was the right thing. And I say that to say, you know, I wasn't necessarily looking to leave my job. I like what I do down here. You know, I enjoy the kids. I enjoy the family. I enjoy my colleagues. And I enjoy waking up in Miami every day and going to work in shorts and a t-shirt and, you know, and doing something that's fun. And getting paid well to do it. So I wasn't in any rush to leave my job. Certainly was not in a rush to leave my job just to say I'm a Division I college lacrosse coach. That was never part of the plan. But this specific opportunity is something that I couldn't say no to personally and professionally.
So let's dive into your experience. You are, as you mentioned, the boys lacrosse coach and a teacher at Ransom Everglades School in Miami, Florida. Prior and in conjunction with that, you were a 10-year professional lacrosse player in Major League Lacrosse in the LXM Pro Tour, who retired last summer. You were an All-Ivy lacrosse player at Brown. And as you mentioned, you are from the Hampton Roads region, having gone to Norfolk Academy before spending 1 year in high school in Charlottesville. And I want to start with that part of the country because I have been fascinated with it for so long for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I think it's a part of the country that not a lot of people know as much about as they should on the basis of how many people live there and how important it is and the role that it plays in the, you know, kind of sports landscape. But, you know, just a few facts. So the market, you know, Southeast Virginia is the 42nd biggest media market in the country. It's bigger than New Orleans, Memphis, Buffalo, Oklahoma City, all cities that have pro sports teams. The Hampton Roads region does not, and it doesn't really have a prominent college team that, you know, people rally behind the way Louisville does, for example, another market that is smaller than this part of the country. That being said, this part of the world has been incredibly significant in terms of the development of high-profile athletes. I would say Allen Iverson and Michael Vick are probably two of the most prominent. But, you know, high school sports, specifically high school football and high school basketball, matter a lot in that part of the world. And then the last thing I'll say is it's a really interesting combination of a bunch of different mid-sized towns. And you know, so there's Norfolk, Newport News, Hampton, Virginia Beach, Chesapeake. I don't know whether you count Williamsburg as being a part of it, but you know, when you're driving to it, you drive through Williamsburg and see the signs for Colonial Williamsburg. So it's certainly like, you know, on in the zeitgeist, so to speak. So for all those reasons, I just think that there's a lot of potential to build fans in that part of the country, regardless of, you know, what sport you're trying to promote or whatever the case may be. And obviously, there's fertile ground for developing young athletes. What was it like growing up there?
So I lost you for half a second, but I got the question. What was it like growing up there? It's funny, you don't realize how small an area it is until you leave and go somewhere else. I was born in California. We moved to Norfolk when I was probably like 3 or so, and I was at Norfolk Academy from my dad was a teacher and coach there, so he started, I want to say, in maybe 88-ish, 87, 88, somewhere in there. I was there from first grade to 11th grade before I went to the Blue Ridge School outside of Charlottesville. So everything I knew in terms of growing up was there. You know, when you leave, and I think it happens for anybody, everybody, you know, when you leave where you grew up to go elsewhere in general, your horizons begin to expand and your understanding of the world begins to expand. And so I think that's what it was for me. When I left for college, all of a sudden I was introduced to a whole, you know, host of not just new people, but different cultures and ways of thinking and processing the world. And excuse me. And then when I moved to Miami, you know, that was expanded some more. And you know, I've spent now 15 years here. But growing up in Virginia, I enjoyed it. It just wasn't something that I felt like I was ready to go back to. You know, when you're 23 to 29, let's say, living in Miami, it's like, well, how do I take a step, the next step, and move from Miami, Florida, back to Virginia? Two drastically different places. But then, you know, once you kind of cross that 30 threshold and you look back, you're like, man, I actually really appreciate Virginia. I appreciate Hampton Roads. It's slower. The people are, I don't want to say nicer, but nicer, for lack of a better, you know, as to say nicer would sell a lot of people short down here. But yeah, man, I think I began to appreciate Virginia and more specifically the Hampton Roads area a lot when I left. And you know, I think this just provides me a great reason to get back there. I still have a lot of people and connections there that you know, are awesome people and have been supportive of me as far back as I can remember. You know, some of them literally have known me since my father moved to Virginia, and or since our family moved to Virginia. And so yeah, it's always held a special place for my heart. Or I didn't know if I would ever really go back there. And if so, what it would be. I kind of had the feeling that, you know, maybe teaching would be the one thing that brought me back there. If I was to go back and teach in my high school, at Norfolk Academy. And, you know, even that was something that even when I was in high school, I knew I wanted to go into education. But I always said I didn't want to come back to here. And it had nothing to do with like not liking that school or enjoying my experience. But it didn't seem like the environment that I wanted to be in. And then, like I said, as I got a little bit older, and the area became a little more appealing, then I was like, well, what is it that would bring me back? And at the time, that was the only thing that I could think of that would really draw me back to the area. And now here we are with this opportunity that to me is like a, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity.
So I want to move forward and cover some of the other aspects of your experience, particularly as they're germane to your lacrosse experience and forming the basis of who you'll become as a college coach. But I think the next logical step is you played at Brown, as mentioned. How do you describe the experience of being a Brown lacrosse player?
Well, my initial reaction is I loved it. It certainly had its ups and downs, and I was just talking with my brother yesterday, because I think we had, different experiences playing collegiately, but also in some ways they paralleled. And I'm trying not to put us on blast, but I think our time is kind of the sort of forgotten group, in the history of the Brown lacrosse landscape. When Brown lacrosse is talked about, it sort of skips over our time. But I enjoyed my time as a student athlete there, and I'm happy that I had, both my overall Brown experience, but also my Brown lacrosse experience. I'm happy that that program is in such a good place, and I try to be as supportive as I can of the program and of the guys there. And I'm not a $1 million donor, but certainly, however I can be of service, I try to be. But I loved it, man. I had a great 4 years in Providence, and certainly that network has been good to me. And I got nothing bad to say about it.
Moving along, as mentioned, you have been a coach and teacher at Ransom Everglades for a really long time. What are the aspects of that experience that are pertinent to what you'll apply, and what are the things that you learned and that you gained that you feel like you're going to leave behind? Because they're, coaching and teaching high school age players is different from college age players.
Really, there's nothing that I want to leave behind. And I think that's a good thing. There are certain things I'll be able to build on. Obviously, we're going to have better players because it's Division I lacrosse, as opposed to high school lacrosse in Miami. But I think my approach down here was always to coach kids in a way that, if we could get the best out of them, they could be collegiate players. I don't think I dumbed anything down. I don't think that's the way of doing things educationally, and as a teacher or a coach. I think you set certain expectations, and then you adjust, not your expectations, but you adjust the way you approach it accordingly. And the expectations were always high. And so to that end, I think, coaching is about relationships at the end of the day. It's about building relationships individually, and collectively. And that's what I mentioned to the team on Monday when I first met with them, and that's what I will continue to mention to them. We have to build a culture and a foundation that is rooted in relationships, in order to get the most out of these guys. And in order for them to trust that, when they come to Hampton, they're going to have the experience on and off the field that they want to have. And I think that's extremely important. That's what I've done down here. I think that's what makes this place difficult to leave. That's why I've stayed where at Ransom Everglades for so long. There have been opportunities for me to leave and to do other things. But I've always appreciated the relationships that I've had down here, whether it was with colleagues or parents or, certainly the players. I think telling my players I was, moving on and taking this opportunity was probably the toughest part of this whole process. Not probably, by far, it was the toughest part. I was probably the longest 5 minutes in the last, I don't know, 15 years maybe. But that's because we've done things the right way down here. And I think that's going to translate. We have to build a culture where guys 10 years, 20 years from now come back and are happy to be a part of the program, and want to continue that legacy that they've left. So that's kind of where I am with it right now. Obviously, that doesn't even dig into the X's and O's, and you know, there's plenty of that and plenty of time to work on that right now. But right now it's about reestablishing relationships, building trust. You know, this is a group of guys that some of them, this will be their third coach in 3 years, or third coach in 4 years. And so, you know, that's tough. So we got to establish the trust. They've got to be able to trust that I have a vision for this, and that I have an idea of where we're going to go, and that it's going to take some time. You know, it's not all going to happen overnight. We're not going to show up in January and all of a sudden knock off, you know, UVA and go on to win a national championship. That's just not how things work. And so they've got to be able to trust that what I'm doing is in the best interest of the program in the immediate and in the long term.
It's the natural bridge to go from talking about you and your experience to talking about the program. And I tweeted when the news broke on Monday night that I thought that you were the perfect hire. And part of what we've already discussed is why I feel that way. But another big part of it is the collision of what I know about Hampton as a program and as a university with what my sense as an outsider is that the program needs right now, in conjunction with what I've seen you do as a coach and how I feel like you're going to approach this. But I want to talk a little bit more specifically about it, because you really did just touch on what I think is the most attainable goal to set at the outset, which is continuing to develop the culture and providing members of the team with an experience that matches their expectations to the best degree possible, and to some extent offsets those growing pains that are necessary for any startup program. And I just want to share a couple of anecdotes, because they're what has illustrated my understanding of your approach. And I had a really cool opportunity yesterday to get this even more reinforced. You've heard me talk about this before, so I apologize for the redundancy. But so we created this event called Committed Academy at Inside Lacrosse, and 2016 was the first year that we hosted it. And all the teams were divided by players going to schools in specific conferences. And we hoped and wanted to have a coach that played at one of the programs that was on that team. And so you coached the team of players going to Ivy League schools. And
The Ancient Eight.
That's right. And it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event. And got hit with this tremendous rainstorm, thunderstorm on Saturday night. And we had the entire camp in one large auditorium. And, you know, kind of plans went sideways in terms of what the expectations were for what we were going to do. It was kind of going to be like the outside downtime chill moment, because guys had played so much over the preceding 2 days. But obviously we got confined to this indoor space. And I remember there were kind of two important factors for this team. Number one, really low on numbers. A bunch of guys had to leave early for another commitment. So I think a roster that started at like 16 or 17 ended up being 11 on the final day. But also some guys that went on to really tremendous careers in college. And what that meant is that at the time, they were really good players and probably like some pretty substantial egos. But also like in the positive way, right? Like this is a group that wanted to and went on to win. So Jackson Morrill, Lucas Kotler, Ryan Graff, Levi McCrady, guys playing out of position. One of the really important things to realize about how impressive it is that your team won is that you didn't have a face-off guy and you were playing against a team led by T.D. Erland. because at the time he was going to play for the America East. So, it was so cool to watch, because on this Saturday night, as you know, this thunderstorm raged outside, you gathered this group of 11 guys, and they all, I mean, the thing that stood out to me was the focus and attention that they had. They were asking you questions about what your experience was like, and their attention was just so tight on your answers. And it really stuck out to me and it really impressed me. And, you know, in the intervening 4 or 5 years, I've seen you replicate that in different and other meaningful ways coaching Nation United as well. I don't necessarily have an anecdote that's that specific in terms of being impressed by what you've done with that group. But that being said, like what it spoke to me was, you know, here we are at this relatively insignificant summer lacrosse camp. You were doing IL a favor by coaching, and but you put your heart into it, and you put your heart into the players that were putting their heart into just competing, and you know, with relatively nothing on the line, other than pride. And I have remained so impressed by that, and I think, you know, it's fair to assume that's going to be the approach that you're going to take to Hampton on day one, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the approach. And I think, you know, to your point, because when I think back about that opportunity, typically, I just enjoy the fact that I was able to be there and do it. But like listening to you tell that story, the things that stood out to me about the win, or the one thing that stood out to me about the win, was it was one over a team that we had lost to earlier in the tournament, and that two, it was sort of a culmination of everything that we had been talking about the entire time. So I don't know if you remember our mantra, but it was do less. Like you said, we had these guys that were great players, you know, but wanted to. Every time they touched the ball, they wanted to do something special. And I was trying to convince them to, like, you know, slow down. We got 13 guys right now, 14 guys. Now we got 11 guys. Do a little bit less to get a little bit more. And so we preached that for 3 days or 4 days or whatever it was. And then we had that meeting, which I didn't really expect many of them to stick around. And we ended up sitting around talking for like an hour. But I was like, hey, look, man, we got a game tomorrow, and I don't want you guys to be up too late, but I'm here to answer any questions that you guys have. Like, forget the lacrosse. At the end of the day, this is about an experience, and this is about you guys being prepared to take the next step. And they all stuck around, and we had some great conversation and great laughs, and I shared some stories, and that's what it comes down to, right? Like, excuse me, when it's all said and done, it's not just about 4 years, it's about 40 years. You know, it's about what is this Hampton opportunity going to create for them that's lasting, you know, that helps move them into adulthood and through adulthood and helps them to become great, you know, husbands and fathers and, you know, business partners and CEOs and whatever else they go on to do. And so, yeah, I mean, right from the start, that's what we want to try to build, is that culture and that trust and that understanding that it's bigger than right now. And I've always tried to tell my high school guys that too. It's funny, because in the moment in games, it's the exact opposite. It's like, forget the score, forget championships and, you know, trying to win a game. It's about winning each moment. Like, we got to focus on this ground ball. That's all that matters. This ground ball, and then the next ground ball, and then putting the next pass on somebody's ear and making sure your stick is in the lane and getting to this next spot defensively. And it's all about what we have to do in this moment to be successful, and stringing a bunch of moments together. But once you step off the field, it's bigger than that. It's like, all right, we won this game, we lost this game, whatever. What is this experience about? You know, how are you using whatever you just learned today over the last 2 hours, 3 hours together as a team? How is that shaping who you become as a man, as you move forward? And also, what our place is in this? Like, what are we doing as a team to make sure that we're contributing to the betterment of somebody else's life? You know, how are we giving back as a program? How are we giving back to the game and to this opportunity that we have? But also, you know, just to the greater good of the community. And so, yeah, that's day one. You know, it's already started. In fact, as soon as I get off this call, I'm sending some stuff out as well to the guys. And That's what we are. We got to build that from the ground up.
So I feel bad asking this question because you just said it's about more than right now, but I do feel like our listeners need to hear your sense of what Hampton Lacrosse is right now. But I want to set the table by acknowledging what's come before, because the truth
Sure.
is, as you said, there's a long way to go. But that suggests that maybe they haven't come a long way, and I want to be here to say that the program has. Now, I feel like because they made their debut on SportsCenter on the road, and it was one of the most high-profile celebrations of the sport recently, perhaps folks don't have a full understanding of exactly how limited some of the resources that the team has access to, and some of the real challenges that they've already overcome. So, I was fortunate in the first fall after the announcement was made that they were going to field the team as a varsity program to go to practice. But at the time, they were really stretched on numbers. There was only one goalie on the roster, and they were stretched in terms of allocation of resources from a coaching standpoint. I believe they only had one volunteer as an assistant that first year. And they hadn't had time to recruit, real legitimate Division I prospects to the roster. Now, 4 years on, and certainly after bringing in a coach that had extensive college coaching experience to lead the program for a year in Rashad, there are some really good players on the roster. There's already a few alums. There's familiarity on campus with who this team is, and there's some understanding of the academic merits and some of the other components of what lacrosse brings to the table from a university standpoint. But even more so, there's attention and understanding within the potential recruiting base, the group of players who might end up going to Hampton for, what could be. So with all that being said, how do you describe what Hampton Lacrosse is right now?
It's a work in progress. That's what it is. I graduated in 2005 from Brown, and I graduated on a Sunday, and Wednesday I was in Connecticut at the MLL combine and draft. And I remember walking in there, and before everything started, all the potential draftees and participants in the combine, we're all sitting in the bleachers, and Dave Gross, he addressed us and talked about what we were getting into, and he talked about the league expanding the following year. And but one thing that he mentioned that I always remember is he said, "You guys are pioneers. This is only the 5th year of the league." And I think it was a fifth, yeah, I think it was started in 2001, right?
Yep, that's right. So it was the 5th year.
He said, "This is the 5th year of the league. You guys are on the ground floor of something that is going to be really special, and that we expect to last forever. And there's going to be some growing pains, but that's a really special thing to be a part of." And that's where we are, and right now, and that's what I mentioned to the guys even on the call Monday. That's something that's really, really cool. For whatever you can say about the program outside looking in, and there's a lot. I've kept an eye on this program because the program means something to me. I didn't go to Hampton, but from the beginning, this program has meant something to me. But I've paid attention, and there's a lot of criticism from the outside and people who don't necessarily know what's going on behind the scenes and behind closed doors. And there's been a lot of talk and congratulatory texts and emails and this, that, and the third, but all that's going to settle down, and the critics will come soon enough. I'm well aware of that, and I'm not worried about it. But I mentioned to them, like, forget the outside, forget all that stuff. This is something that's awesome to be a part of. This is going to be the 6th year of the program, and hopefully 20 years from now, 30 years from now, they'll be able to come back and say they were literally at the very beginning stages of building something that is really cool. And how many players can say that? Like, how many guys are there living right now that can go back to their college and say, you know, that I helped build this. I literally helped build this from the ground up. I was here when there was not this, when we didn't have this, we didn't have this, this didn't exist. And I'm not talking about brick and mortar. I'm talking about, you know, just from a functional, structural standpoint. And that's something that's really cool to be a part of. And I hope they appreciate that and understand it. And so, yeah, that's where we are. I think that's where the program is right now. We're still in that building stage. But hopefully, you know, what my agenda is to fast forward the progress a little bit. You know, the guys that have come before me in this position have done a great job of keeping things afloat and moving it forward. Now it's time to take that next step and move forward, and hopefully just with a little more pace to it.
So if that's the spiritual, for lack of a better word, pitch for folks wanting to be a part of the program, what's the practical pitch? Because I know that there are a lot of assets that institution brings to the table. Obviously, it is one of the foremost HBCUs in terms of its history and the role that it plays in that culture. And, you know, certainly that is, I want to talk about the component of, you know, the national conversation around race and racial justice and the role that that conversation plays in lacrosse. But I also want to separate it from the merits of Hampton as a university and a college experience. So, you know, certainly the role that Hampton has played historically, separate from that, the academic reputation is top notch. And separate from that, on a comparative basis, as a private school, it's very affordable. That's what I understand as being kind of the practical components of the recruiting pitch. What am I missing?
No, I don't think you're missing a lot. I would throw in there that it's a small school. And so that, you know, from an academic standpoint and you know, for me, I can speak to that personally. Whereas my brother went to Ohio State and loved that big school experience, it was extremely important for me to be in a small school environment where my class sizes were smaller and where there was personal attention paid to me and to my work and to, you know, I couldn't just skate by. I think there's a huge upside to that for the guys. But I think you kind of hit everything else. It's a phenomenal school academically. I think that kind of goes unnoticed sometimes in the general public. Like, Hampton University academically is top notch and always has been. But I think there's also the piece of, you know, just being in a different environment. There's something really powerful about expanding your experiences as a, you know, 18 to 22 year old. And I try to tell my guys that all the time, my high school guys, like, forget going to a place that resembles exactly what you've been in for the last 7 years at this school, right? Like, go somewhere different, experience something new, get out of Miami, get out of Florida, get out of this, you know, bubble, this social and cultural bubble that you're used to. Because at the end of the day, the world is bigger than that, right? And like, when you graduate, you need to have these other experiences so that you can relate to people. And I think that's what a lot of people, or a lot of lacrosse players in particular, will be able to gain from being in an environment like Hampton University.
And the last thing I want to ask specifically about the team is, you mentioned the tactics and X's and O's. How do you describe yourself on field as a coach?
Are you referring to the style of play, or are you referring to me?
No, yeah, the style of play that your teams, you know, play.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, I would love to, you know, without getting too deep into it, I would love to get up and down the field. You know, if you've watched our Nation United team, I think that in a lot of ways mirrors what we would like to do. If you look at a Virginia, a Brown, an Albany, you know, we want to be, I want to give guys the freedom to make decisions. One of the things that, I've always appreciated about the coaches that I've played for, where I thrived, they didn't overcoach, and they allowed players to make decisions in real time. Coach Duquette actually explained this one time in a conversation, actually this spring, in a conversation that I had with him. And I'd never heard him really talk about it like this, but it made so much sense. He said, you know, part of our success at Norfolk Academy was that we prepared as best we could throughout the week. And then on game day, it wasn't about me. It wasn't about the coaches. It was about the players. And I empowered them to make decisions at game speed and in real time. And, you know, we lived and died on that, basically. And I think that's I had never really heard it phrased like that, but that has always been my approach. You know, you tend to be product of the coaches you've played for. And so for me, that's it. Like, we want to work our tails off every week, every day we're practicing. You know, building the foundational skill set. But then when it comes to game time, I want guys to be empowered to make decisions and, you know, to play with some freedom. I'm not the type of coach, whether it's, you know, Hampton University, whether it's Ransom Everglades boys lacrosse or Ransom Everglades middle school girls basketball. I don't yell at kids for, you know, decisions. I don't yell at them for making bad plays. It's the other thing. It's the effort and you know, not running through a ground ball the right way, or you know, dropping their head when they make a bad play, or not running back and getting on defense. Like, those type of things are the things that'll fire me up. But the rest of it, we can be relatively okay with, you know. But with that freedom, you know, comes some real responsibility. That means, in order to play that way, you have to have guys that understand the game and guys that can really make decisions, you know, make informed decisions in, you know, in a moment, right? In a second or less than a second. Guys that understand general slide packages. Guys that understand the where the ball is supposed to be, how it's supposed to get there, when it's supposed to get there. All those little basic rules. So, you know, we'll kind of play with rules in place. Again, I don't want to get too much into X's and O's, but we will certainly have rules in place, and we will be structured. But I also want guys to be free. I want guys to enjoy playing the game. You know, the last 5 years or so, for me, it's been let's say the last 3.5-4 years, it's been make lacrosse fun again, right? Like, guys shouldn't have to worry about stepping on the field and being concerned that if they make a mistake, they're never going to go back in the game. That doesn't make it fun, and it makes guys play tentatively. I've never enjoyed that. I've never enjoyed being under that kind of tight leash. And so I don't coach that way. You know, I trust guys to make the right decisions. I might question their decision, or they might make the wrong one, and I'll let them know. But at the end of the day, I trust them to make that decision. And that comes with me and preparing them well, and them doing the work on their end as well. You know, like right now, we're not going to have them this fall, which means they've got a lot of work they're going to have to do on their own. And we'll get together and we'll do some film work and that type of stuff. And, you know, we'll get them a workout plan and we'll get them, you know, drills that they need to be doing. But the onus is going to be on them, so that when they show up in January, whenever it is that we can get back together to as a team, they got to be ready to roll. So, you know, there's responsibility all over the place. But hopefully at the end of the day, that if everybody plays their role and does what they're supposed to do, it will translate to something on the field that's fun to watch.
So I've got three more questions. I know we're running close on time, but I solicited via Twitter a couple questions for this podcast. So I want to shout out to Jordan Johnson, who provided one. And it's the last question about Hampton, and then we'll shift to the final two. But he asked, you know, funding for a program is huge, and especially so at HBCUs. What's the sell to potential donors and sponsors in order to keep this good momentum going? And I know that you've got a little bit of a strategy in terms of some folks in your corner that helped you make the decision to pursue this opportunity. And I just want to put on top of that, you know, specifically around a plan for building out your coaching staff.
Yeah, we certainly have to raise dollars. You know, for anybody that is interested in donating and helping and supporting the cause, because every dollar matters. HamptonNation.com is a great place to get that started, and you can go there and you can donate, and you can donate specifically to a lacrosse program. I think that's a great start for anybody, you know, that happens to listen to this that wants to be involved from that standpoint. But we do have a plan in place, and, you know, we've kind of targeted very specific areas that we need to raise funding for. The coaching staff is one of those, and we will build that out accordingly. But I think this is an opportunity. You know, the local community, the regional community, the national community, to be a part of helping to build something that to me is unbelievably unique in sport. I can't imagine there is any program like Hampton University lacrosse in the nation, simply because, you know, on the surface, the easy low-hanging fruit is that it's the only Division I or the only HBCU with a Division I lacrosse team. But when you go back to the origin of it, like the foundations of this program is not just we had a club team and you know, the school decided to make it a varsity team. It's rooted literally in the dream and vision of one young man who had a great experience with the sport and wanted to give that to other people. So he decides he wants to start a program, and then in the process passes away, and his mother decides to take up the mantle to make sure it gets going. Like there's nothing else. There's no other story like that. Nothing that I've heard of, and certainly nothing in lacrosse. So when we talk about this being, you know, such a fraternity and the game being medicine, this game was literally medicine to this family. Hampton University lacrosse right now is the fruition of a dream of a young student, somebody who just happened to play the game, not at, you know, he wasn't a student that, you know, played at Calvert Hall or Gilman, like where lacrosse was, you know, something he was born with, and that, you know, he was going on to play at, you know, Syracuse or Virginia or wherever, right? This is just somebody who played the game, fell in love with it, and wanted to provide that opportunity and that experience to other people. And so here we are. And I think that's something really special to be a part of. And then when you couple that with the opportunity to be, you know, as the only Division I or the only HBCU with a Division I team, to be able to be a light for others, you know, and an example of what can be for so many young players, a place that, you know, that they can look at and find heroes and find people that not just look like them, but people that they want to be. I think that's very powerful. And we're in a position where everybody can be a part of supporting that. And I think the support that I've received, you know, from this community, from the lacrosse community, just in the last 36 hours has been tremendous. You know, whether it's been fans, whether it's been people that, you know, that I know that have been a part of my life, people that I've never met before. It's been college coaches from every level, Division I, II, III. Been people who were, you know, fans of me when I was a player, I mean, the support so far has been tremendous. And, you know, so I guess just to bring it back to your question, you know, there's no donation that's too small, you know, $5, $10, whatever, it all adds up. And so if you really do want to be a part of supporting this and being a part of this organization and saying you're part of something special, HamptonNation.com is a very easy and quick way to do that.
It's remarkable to me that we've been talking for between 45 minutes and an hour, and we really haven't brought up the fact that all of this is happening amidst, you know, a moment of protest and calls for reform and recognition of, you know, 4 centuries of injustice and other aspects of, you know, the racial dialogue in the United States. It really hasn't, you know, we really haven't talked about that as a part of this. What Right. role did that play? And what does it mean when it comes to turning the page forward?
Yeah, and, you know, I think part of why we haven't talked about that is because that's, at the end of the day, that's not what this is about. Hampton University Lacrosse was not started with that in mind, and it wasn't, you know, and it won't continue just because of that. But I think what is important to note, and I want to keep it simple, because I think there's a number of ways to like really dig into this and make it bigger. But I think the bigger we get, the less focused we get on the actual tangible steps and things that we can do to contribute. But I think for us, the way I frame this in my head is, you know, the problems that we have in this country, the systemic problems, were built over 400 years, and they are numerous, wide ranging, and without you know, one clear answer to solve them. There's not one solution, and the best thing that I have found is that we can all take what we do best and use that to the best of our abilities to contribute to the solutions, to the numerous solutions. And what I do best right now is lacrosse and connecting with people and building relationships and helping to mentor kids and, you know, young men. And I think that's what it is. So our lane right now, and that's certainly not to say stay in your lane. It's just to say, you know, whatever you do best, let's make the most of it and let's use it to contribute. And so I want to use lacrosse and use Hampton University lacrosse. And I want our guys to use lacrosse and Hampton University lacrosse to speak up. You know, I certainly will be having some conversations with them about empowering them to use their platform. They all have one to speak up, certainly within reason. You know, we want to make sure that we're not doing anything that's going to, you know, embarrass the school or put the school in a funny spot. But, you know, I want our guys to know that. Not only do they have a literal voice where they can say and write and speak and tweet, but their actions are going to contribute to the betterment of our community, of the Black community in particular. And so to that end, we also, you know, we want to be a program that serves and gives back, you know, in the local community and the national community as well. I think that's what we can do immediately on a day-to-day basis. Is be the best version of ourselves and make sure that we're reaching back and giving to others and then using our voices literally and figuratively to speak up.
Well, Chaz, like I mentioned, I've got one left, and I think it's an appropriate one because anybody that's made it this far understands that, you know, one of the reasons I tweeted that you were a perfect hire is because, you know, I find you to be an incredibly thoughtful, creative, ambitious, individual who doesn't try to solve problems in the traditional way. And by virtue of that, I feel like this is kind of a creative question to end on. From Connor Cirillo, what's one thing that you've changed your mind about recently and why?
Ooh.
Is that a good question?
What's
Like, I feel
one?
like I feel like I
That's
feel
a
like we
great
all need to
question.
be better at acknowledging the things that we were wrong about and give credit to people who did and then for changing their mind.
Wow. What is one thing that I have changed my mind about recently? That's a tough question. I feel like I need to think about this, and I want to think about it and like answer it in some other way, shape, or form, because I don't want to give like a phony answer right now. And I feel like there is something. Like I feel like I've had this conversation recently where I'm like, yeah, you know what? I wasn't thinking about this way before, and I just can't off the top of my head. I'm not sure what that is,
You know what?
but that's a great question.
I'm gonna accept that answer because in addition to saying I changed my mind, I also feel like saying I don't know has to and give me more time to think about it. Those two things have to be said way more frequently as well. So I'm gonna call that an appropriately closed loop.
Yeah, man. I my uncle gave the my uncle officiated the service for my grandfather's funeral, and he was telling a story, and he said, you know, my grandfather used to say, if he didn't have an answer, he would say, not knowing, I hesitate to answer. And then my uncle did that in class one day and got in trouble for it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure off the top, but I think, yeah, it is okay to say you don't know.
Get back to us, and when we post this podcast, we'll make sure to post it in text beneath, and that'll be the tease to
Absolutely.
get people to listen. So, Chaz Woodson, once again, congratulations on this opportunity at Hampton. We're really
Thank you.
excited to continue to see you develop the program, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Terry. Have a great one.